Okay, so here we go. This is my first conversation with May. No, this is our first. Carol and I are talking to Ion September 13th, 1988. We're going to be leaving in a couple of weeks later, September 88, to travel to see Skolnick in Chicago, Sherman Skolnick. Then we go and see May Brussel. And May will die while we're out there on October 3rd. But we don't know what's happening on September 13th during this session, so we ask about what's going to happen to May. So this is the beginning of discussing May through the evergreens. I don't know if I... No, I did talk about May. One of the great IOM predictions, and when I had my first session with the evergreens in June 1980, I asked about May and Brussels' research, and the evergreens said it will be greatly validated in 2 years. And that would be May-June 1982, when John Loftus came on 60 Minutes. He was a lawyer working at the Department of Justice, and he'd found the secret Nazi documents called the Belarus file, referring to a part of the Soviet Union, Belarus. And so he talked about the Nazis being smuggled into the United States intelligence world. That's what May was talking about for 10 years before that. So when May got confirmed, validated by John Loftus, I got in touch with Loftus and brought May and Loftus together. So that was one of the first confirmation of Ion, of Evergreen's accuracy. But I never did, I never went back to the Evergreens for another 3 years, till 1985. I still was testing them. I waited 5 years to see if Ion's, if the Evergreens predictions panned out. By 1985 they had, so I decided they're real, so I went back. So May Brussel was one of the first validations of the Evergreens. So here it is, that's 1982, so now it's 6 years later, and May has cancer. And so we're talking to Ion about it. Ion. We're talking to the Evergreen. Okay, let me just bring this in. And I'm going to mute everybody so we get perfect sound. Mute.
All participants are now muted.
So it starts at the 2 minute and 5 second mark. Carolyn actually leads this. Often if Carolyn was with me, she would have her questions first. So as a doctor, we got her to talk first about May. So I got to make sure everything's on. Okay, so I think get that up. Okay, here we go.
Greetings, Karen.
We'll locate May Brussel.
Okay, we'd like you to locate May Brussel, born 1922, May 29th. And she is in California, in Carmel, on Via Crotalo, C-R-O-T-A-L-O, number 25620, May Brussel.
Yes, we have this one.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she's not there. She's in a convalescent home, right? Evergreens nearby?
Will you see her essence, which is sufficient.
All right.
May Brussel has been diagnosed as having, it would appear to be, uterine cancer that has spread even to the
lungs.
What we take it as the omentum,
yes,
of the abdominal cavity. The first question is, will she survive? Therefore, should we help her survive?
We see that this has reached a point where the elimination of cancer from the body is not possible under these prevailing circumstances.
Whew. Then how long does she have to live?
We see the termination of this existence would be within the next 7-9 months.
Can I do anything to help her be more comfortable?
Mm. Your good wishes, your kindnesses, your letters, as if there is to be a continuance, mm-hmm. all of this. But as far as from a medical point of view, we see there is not that great amount which can be done.
No, it would appear that her attitude is very bitter.
Yes.
Regarding this, I know it would be useful for her to change her attitude to pass over, you know, with flow instead of with resentment.
Mm.
Can that be helped or resolved?
Now, from that aspect, from the psychological aspect, there's much that you can do, teaching certain mental techniques, dividing the mind so that the cancer cells can be seen as that which is shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Similar techniques as those. Yes.
Would she then, I could take her tapes on visualization and
yes.
the silencing technique. Would she balk at the Louise Hayes tapes as being too airy-fairy?
No.
So any of those?
No, any of those would be, any and all would be useful.
Right. Now, I guess the question becomes, what will become of her archives? And I'll get Bob to continue with those questions.
Before we go into the archives, where did the cancer come from? What caused it in her situation?
Well, basically, from the mouth of the uterus through the upper portion of the uterus, from that portion, not through any vaginal, is basically cell division here.
What in her lifestyle led her to acquire this? Or what was it that in her makeup that made this happen?
Well, that which contributed, but not did cause, is the attitude towards her own femininity.
She prefers to be masculine, you mean?
No. But that her femininity and being female was a position. Not so much of the power as if she were male. So there was a certain resentment to her femininity. You see?
This was common in the people of her generation?
Yes.
It's kind of the repression?
Yes.
Yes. She did know Henry Miller and found he released her a lot in the 60s, so she must have been quite repressed before that, and when she still was repressed.
Yes.
It wasn't because of her changing her diet.
No.
Or radiation?
No. None of these.
No paranoid scenarios?
No.
Were you going to say something else about her repression?
Basically, that yes, there was a considerable amount of release in the mid 60s, and it still has not solved this attitude towards power as an individual, that if femininity is subtracted from power, masculinity added to power, therefore males are more powerful than females.
Now, is this the Evergreens did a reading on May?
Yes.
Back in 1985, we talked yes. about Fritz Kramer.
Yes.
And you talked about early in April 86, there would be a change in her attitude toward her research, her ideas, and how she was projecting on the world.
Yes.
Things. And you said it would be an internal recognition in herself.
Yes.
Did she reach that point?
She began to reach it. And there is a far greater recognition than previously, and that is, to a degree, contributory towards the bitterness that you feel there is not a great amount of time.
To correct her, to live with a different attitude?
Yes.
All right, so, but now we're left with her vast archives, her vast research. Of what value is this? I mean, what should we do? What do myself and her associates who are concerned about it and are organizing now to preserve it? What advice do you have to give to us about raising funds or how to organize it?
We would suggest that a mailing be done to all of those with whom she was associated and to say that there is a foundation being created. and that the archives will be stored, catalogued, with the idea towards publication.
Should when should Carol and I begin to donate money to that foundation, to that organizing process?
Late '89. Yes.
We will be visiting these people in California in the next month. We should not donate some money.
You can do some, but more of the more is in late '89.
In other words, the person named John Judge who is organizing this now, he doesn't have much money now, but I think he's looking for space and he's probably in a state of rush.
Mm.
It doesn't need to be rushed as much as he wants it?
Not as much. It is the founding principles. Do need a beginning. But the point is, May is still alive.
Yes.
And acting as if she is no longer physically alive is not useful to her or to any other. That which she need to know is that some effort is being made at cataloging with the direction of print.
And that should be encouraged that we're working on that in that direction?
Yes.
Will there be a place found over the next few weeks to move her stuff?
Yes.
And that'll be done by John Judge?
John Judge and others.
Right, so if we can contribute, up to $1,000 in, or is that too much? $1,000 in this month coming up?
A fraction high, we would suggest.
500?
In that area. Realizing it is better to give twice than one large sum at this particular time.
All right, and they'll understand that.
Yes.
Can we play what the Evergreens say about May to Tom Davis and John Judge?
If you choose.
They wouldn't mind hearing it? It wouldn't upset anything?
No. Well, the major point is to realize that it will be accomplished.
Will May be instrumental in helping maybe dictate some of the book? Will she be able to do any more work?
Oh, yes.
So we could encourage her to take her...
Most
class.
Assuredly, yes.
Good. And you said the research center will be organized?
Yes.
And do you recommend a name for it?
No, that is May's.
May Brussels?
Whatever she chooses.
All right.
You see?
Okay, so there'll be discussion on that.
Yes.
Is it wise that the advice on her health or the comments on her health be released, or is that basically for Bob and Carol?
That is basically for Bob and Carol.
Okay.
So just about the organizing should be played for John and Tom.
Yes.
All right. All right, now we're going to go into another area. Thank you, Evergreens, for advice on that, on May.
Okay, so that's the first part. Just give her this noise. Okay, I'll mute people. Anybody have any comments? This is, remember, a month. We visit May a few days before she dies in October. We arrive in Carmel, California, after being in Chicago with Skolnick. And the Olympics are on now. What struck me the day we went to a restaurant in Skolnick's neighborhood, say the September 22nd, say 1980, Ben Johnson was the big headlines, the Canadian sprinter who won the gold medal. And then they found a claim he had taken some steroids or something, and so they took his medal away. That, I remember looking at that story in the restaurant, meeting with Skolnick, and we did a lot of talk about May Brussels that day, that meeting. And we stayed overnight at Skolnick's. So then a few days later, we go to Carmel, and we get to see May on October 3rd, and she dies an hour later after we saw her, which was the first time Carol and I ever met her. So we met her a few minutes before she died. Let's see. Mute. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
Liz, she is one of the greatest journalists of the 20th century. Anybody who listens to her recording is impressed immediately with her mind and her range of understanding of the stuff that the internet has made a crummy porno meme, the Alex Jones stuff, the David Icke nonsense. May actually could read, and she read 10 newspapers a day and really thought through a lot of interesting points way ahead of everybody. And go back and listen to her recordings in 1972 before Watergate happened. It's incredible what she had to say. So she always was on tender hooks, maybe that's the word. The authorities didn't know what to do with her. They wanted to get rid of her. They killed her daughter, one of her daughters, in December 1980. But she went public anyways by the summer of 71 when the Pentagon Papers were released in the spring of 71. That sort of thought, well, she thought, well, if Daniel Ellsberg can make that sacrifice, then I can do something. So here we are in 1988, and so we are being told that she's going to pass away in 8-9 months. But it happens a lot sooner. One could say, oh, the Evergreens were wrong. Well, no, I think that they were being diplomatic. They're not going to say exactly when she dies, just make us aware. We didn't expect she'd die. We thought she'd overcome the cancer. But she went pretty fast. And anybody have any comment yet on what we
heard? You know
what,
Bob? She reminds me a lot of Snowden, but she did it the old-fashioned way, you know, with cataloging the newspaper and bringing all this hidden information out. Like Snowden has, you know, dumped a lot of information that's not
well-known. Well, what she did is it was right from public documents. It was not secret information, just nobody read as many papers as she did and noticed one paper would edit the story, another paper didn't edit it. So she'd have the two articles on the same story and add information just piled up. It was all public documentation. Scully told me while we were with them a few weeks before she died that they had confidentially confided to each other that they were both sort of psychic and they would check out things psychically, then wait for the information to validate what they'd already figured out. So they bonded on that level as two researchers who could talk about what they really did. They would never admit it in public. And Skolnick only told me because she knew, he suspected she'd be dying soon. So Snowden, one thing you hear in the later session is that the reason they didn't kill May is they don't know how much information she's squirreled away and given to other people. So if something happens to her, then it gets released. So you're kind of protected if you're really good at it. So I don't know if Snowden's protected on that way, that he has put out, saved his information, copied it, given to other people to release it if something happens to him. But that would be one way.
He's supposed to have a code. Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Snowden has the dead man's switch. He's a dead man switch, so when he releases that on Twitter, that a bunch of people that he's worked with are going to release a bunch of extra information.
And he said that.
Yes.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, Roxy brought it up with Ion and said, hey, Ion, what's that code that Snowden published? Is that the dead man switch?
Oh, Roxy knew the title of that technique?
Must have read about it. I don't know.
Dead man's switch. Yeah. It's been talked about in journalism.
Yes.
Dead man's switch is when they have to check in. So Snowden has to check in regularly to turn off something that if he's not alive and he can't turn it off, then all of his collaborators will be notified automatically. If he doesn't respond, they know he's dead and that they should release the information.
Well, Kim, you didn't know he may have done that. So what were you saying was similar to Snowden?
Well, just the fact that she, first of all, was tying in so many pieces. Snowden has done that. There's these released documents, you know, in the order that he released a lot, you know, kind of filled in pieces. But the fact that she, I don't think we have that ability anymore, do we, Bob? I mean, things aren't printed anymore. You know, journalism is gone. We have people that blog things, but we don't have what was available in the 80s when we were 70s.
You mean pieces of paper? We don't have pieces of paper unless you buy
pieces of paper, Right, and now you'd have to know what room to go to read people's articles or blogs or anything to try and put it together. You know, within
what
her
room?
Days, she could.
You have to know what room to go to.
Yeah, your URL. You know, everybody has their own domain.
Right.
Yeah, their room. You'd have to know which one to go to get some of this information, where she could go out and buy 10 papers.
Yeah.
You know, work from that template, which I don't think we do anymore.
Right. Well, there's still papers being produced, but people don't, I don't know what they do with newspapers. I don't know if they're reading them. But, Chad, what was interesting is what Ion said to you about the dark web, the deep web, that it's not understood or known what really goes on there. You remember that? Didn't he say that to you?
Yeah. He said that. What people think the dark web is, that's not even what the dark web is.
Yeah. And maybe Snowden knows how to use that. If it's what they say on TV shows, it is a way of communicating, hiding information. So what else to say about this? So she, we're trying to figure out, you know, what to do with the archives. And the Emirates said something that was borne out. When they said to us, do not donate $1,000, just do $500, wait till late 89, that was very accurate, because a lot of factional fightings happened over the archives between John Judge, Tom Davis, and Dave Emery, and you'll hear me talking to May about that probably in the next session that I play. So it wasn't wise to give money to that situation right away. And they saw that and said, they didn't explain why, but they said, hold back your money, don't donate right away. So that, in retrospect, was accurate. Let's see.
Bob, she was number 22. She was born on the 1922. She's also
born,
22.
Yeah. Yeah, Lyndon LaRouche was born September 8, 1922. Mae Brussels was born May 29, 1922. And on that was also the birthday of John Kennedy. Hinckley, the guy who shot Reagan. The guy who climbed Mount Everest did it on May 29th. Bob Hope was 1929, and maybe one other guy. It's about five interesting points on that date. May 29. Mm-hmm. I was February 2nd. May was May 29th. LaRouche was September 8th. And then Kissinger was 1923. Hugh Kenner was 1923. I think Norman Mailer was 1923. So it was an interesting bunch of births at that period. And
Bob,
LaRouche is still alive.
About...
Well, no, he isn't. Oh. LaRouche is a double now, but he lived a long time.
Bob, did you know about the paperclip project? Paperclip, was that Mae Brussels stuff?
Yeah, let me just say this. Dr. Beter was born June 21st, 1921, so he was the first, and he was just a few months before us. So you put Beter into that realm, too. When I said that her information was confirmed, Project Paperclip kind of information was confirmed on 60 Minutes in 1982. Well, the first author on Project Paperclip came out about 1971. She read that book, and she incorporated into her thinking pretty quickly. I think it was pretty skimpy, but she certainly knew about Project Paperclip at least by 71 when the book came out, the first book on it. But nobody was thinking about it, the implications of it. She was, and she explained in her article for Paul Krasner's The Realist in 1972, August 72, this is the anniversary right now, August 72, she explained the implications of the Watergate break-in, that nobody knew was a break-in of any consequence, yet she already knew and said it would lead to the President Reagan becoming, Ronald Reagan, governor of California, would become president as a result of the Watergate break-in. She knew it was the Nazi network taking over the White House or reconfirming the power they'd already taken. Ion says that there was a coup in 1963, and that group that did that were in power till today. So Ion May would say they used Project Paperclip Nazis in their network. So Watergate was a a solidification of whatever happened in 63. Okay, so there could have been media changes. Satellite came in 68, live satellite broadcast. That might have altered the fragility of the Big Brother, secret Big Brother guys. And May was investigated in 67 after visiting Jim Garrison, the famous movie JFK with Kevin Costner, is it? Plays Jim Garrison. And they show all these people running around in his office, half of them rip-off artists or infiltrators, ruining Garrison's scene there. Well, May would have been one of the people there helping Jim Garrison, and when she flew back to California, it came out in her Freedom of Information file, probably released about 10 years later, that they took her off the airplane at Dallas. I think it was in Dallas, so they're symbolic, and they put her in a quarantine for like 8 hours, didn't explain anything, and then they put her back on the plane. She didn't know what that meant until she saw the Freedom of Information file where it said, this woman is willing to go public and say that the United States is a fascist country. That's what she, why she would be dangerous. Just to say that, a fascist country. And when she got the file, no, when she found out she had cancer, she started to think back, oh, maybe I got zapped, I got radiated by something in 67 when they took me off the airplane. Hmm. But we just heard the Irene say, no, she wasn't radiated. There were no paranoid scenarios. Many people think May was murdered and this and that, but according to the Evergreens, they're not. But the Evergreens say that O.J. killed Nicole Goldman and the other guy, and many people don't believe that, so they would say the Evergreens are wrong. So depends on what you think. But as you listen to the Evergreens, they're pretty sober. They're pretty good mediumship, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very strong how they speak. Okay, so what else to say in background?
Bob, I don't think I caught the first few minutes well. Did they say something about her thinking that she couldn't do anything about her cancer, or just that?
No, it was about. I'm asking why psychologically, if that's a factor in cancer, why did she get cancer? And they said, well, she was bitter. She was bitter because she was the best in her field, and she felt because she was a woman, she was ignored.
Mm.
And she didn't like that. And remember, she grew up as a very, you know, as a Jewish princess, very wealthy person. In her father was the rabbi of Los Angeles. I may have repeated this a couple weeks ago, but her father was the rabbi of L.A., so it was often normal in her home to have Einstein, the Warner Brothers, all the elite of the Jewish world in her home. So she grew up with that. And when they did a world travel in 1930, so she's like 11 or 12, there in India, and she saw the poverty in India and didn't know people had poverty. That was a shocker to her.
Wow.
Let's see, her family, the father, so her grandfather did the, or great-grandfather invented the famous store called Macy's, which is, I think it's in Chicago, more in the Pacific Coast. You might have seen I.G. Magnin, M-A-G-N-I-N. I.G. Magnin, that was her family. So when her father died in 1984, Reagan sent a personal note to her. He was president at the time. The governor, Pete Wilson, got up and did a eulogy about May, about her father. And then she went on the radio station the next day and talked about what creeps Reagan were, what creeps Governor Wilson was, what Nazis they were.
Something Zappa would do.
She had to sit there with these assholes praising her father, and she had to grit her teeth, bite her tongue. She wasn't the kind of person to make a scene at the funeral, but it was hilarious. That's like a great one should hear that recording. We should look for it. In 1984, where she's really pissed off, and she just lambastes all these assholes that were ruining her father's funeral.
Hey, Bob,
she didn't have any qualms in saying it.
Bob, when did you first when did Meg first catch your eye? Contact her or to
in 1978 We magazine had an article on her. I knew nothing about her, and I read about her in 1978, and I thought, well, that's interesting, but for some reason I didn't do anything till I went out to visit Joe Dunn Sloan. We went and visited Walter Bord, who I just met in December 79, And I was involved with the Secret Council 10 stuff, so I'm not running around trying to figure out who's the conspiracy. I am the conspiracy. I'm the guy causing a lot of the shit, right, in the Secret Council 10. And so I had no reason to look into her, but when I met Walter Borton in December 79, and then we visited him in April 80 out at Aspen, Colorado, he let me hear the tape of his interview of an assassin that he talked about in his book, Operation Mind Control. And then we went out and visited Jodan Sloan in Los Angeles. And while there, Jodan Sloan had all these Paul Shockley Cosmic Awareness newsletters where they were going on about LaRouche's new solidarity. They might have mentioned Mae Brussel, all this conspiracy literature, which Paul Shockley was on the leading edge of. Dave Worster would not have channeled that kind of stuff, but Shockley did. Don't know how much of it was real cosmic awareness, but he had Dr. Beter in there, and I knew about Dr. Beter, who was a friend of mine, but I didn't know about May, and I didn't know that people were reading LaRouche's newspaper. I knew about LaRouche, but it was, I saw from that it was a popular phenomenon, so I had to look into it. So I looked up, I remembered Mae Brussel from the We magazine, so in June, when I got back from California in June 1980, which is also the same time I do this first session with the Evergreens, June 4th, 1980, and I asked about Mae Brussel, so that means I got back, and I hadn't thought of this before, I got back the end of May, middle of May 1980 from California after visiting Bowert and Jodan Sloan, and called up Mae Brussel. I found her number, called her up, and got some of her tapes right away, really did a crash program on what her stuff was, so then I was ready to ask questions about her a few weeks later. And unless I did it in the session, no, I did it in the first session. So it was a quick acquaintance with May, and then I never looked back. We became friends.
Hmm. Hey, but Bob, you were aware of a lot of the information she was writing about firsthand,
yes,
weren't
yeah.
you?
Well, I did with Zappa, I helped her a lot. Basically, I helped her crack the Fritz Kramer case. Now, you look up Peter Drucker, king of corporate management, great friend of Marshall McLuhan, who used McLuhan's information to become a famous management consultant guy. He was from Frankfurt, Germany. So you read his book, came out in 1979, Adventures of a Bystander. And he writes about his friendship with Marshall McLuhan and Bucky Fuller, but also his friendship with Fritz Kramer. He brought Fritz Kramer over from Frankfurt. And in 1979, no one knew that Fritz Kramer, who the essay on him is called The Man Who Invented Henry Kissinger. So here's the most influential guy in the American military. He was head of what they called Army Plans. He would have ran the Korean War and whatever else, the Vietnam War. He was the top guy, a secretive guy. Nobody knew that he was a top guy in Hitler's army. And that actually was put into the what they call the dock at Nuremberg, and was being cross-examined, and eventually probably would have been hung, but he somehow got released, and he ended up running American intelligence. So Fritz Kramer is the big linchpin in the Project Paperclip thing. So May started investigating Fritz Kramer in the 70s. She became aware of him. But she wasn't aware of Drucker's book, because Drucker talks about how he brought him over, and Drucker doesn't know or is covering up the Nazi connection of Fritz Kramer, his buddy. Maybe Drucker was part of this acceptable Nazi network, because he was an Austrian aristocrat, I think. So it's interesting you have Drucker in the middle of friendships with key, you know, meme creators, Bucky Fuller, McLuhan. Then on the Big Brother level, Fritz Kramer and creating Henry Kissinger. Kissinger was mentored by Fritz Kramer. That's why May would say Kissinger never lost his German accent. He grew up, you know, in Germany and then came over to New York. And remember our Forrest Gump of the art world, Gerd Stern, his mother's best friend was Kissinger's mother. So Gerd went to school with Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger was born about 1923, so I think he was a few years older than Gerd. Gerd was born in 1928, but Gerd certainly knew about Kissinger as a kid. So you get that overlap with the art world, and Gerd Stern knew everybody. But so that means Kissinger left Germany young, and grew up in New York City. So this Fritz Kramer was a big deal. So I talked to the Evergreens and plus my own other intelligence network. So I was able to give May some key information where she could get some documentation, because she would never do anything without documentation. She always tried to be, she knew that was the only way to be real. So we got the information, and she was able to go public and call out Fritz Kramer. And you will hear on Who's Forgotten Ferlin me talking to the Evergreens about May releasing the information. What would be the impact? And the Evergreens said, there will be no impact. Nothing. Nobody will care. And that this would be in 19, I'm doing Who's Forgotten Ferlin in 1988, and the May Brussels question probably was around 1985. So nobody cared, and the Evergreens said, one factor you have to look at is that many people in German society were Nazis, and then when the war ended, John McCloy, the main guy for Rockefeller, organized the Zone, which is novelized by Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow, what was happening the few months after the end of the war, where Britain, the United States, France, and Russia are fighting over what part of Germany they're going to carve up. It's a great novel, Gravity's Rainbow, and that period, eventually the Americans bring it to order with John McCloy leading it, John J. McCloy. Look up his name, MC, I think it's capital CLOY. He was involved in everything. He was Rockefeller's man in the world of government. And so I'm saying they organized Germany. What was the point there? Don't know why I was leading into that.
Is Fritz Kramer still alive?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So to rebuild German society, the citizens had to become what would be management or workers and the whole thing. So all these blatant Nazis, maybe even ran concentration camps, and that, they were just citizens after the war. So it's not a big deal that you have a Nazi or Nazis in German high society or leading the corporations. A main guy to look at is Helmut Schacht and Hermann Abs, ABS, AABS. They were Nazi bankers, and they end up, Hermann Abs end up being the main banker for the Vatican in the 80s, that late, 40 years later. So so we have to understand, the Irene said, that it's not a scandal in Germany that everybody was an asshole, loser, Nazi, you know, everybody's father. Of course, that created a big trauma for the baby boomer German kids, right? They apparently had a lot of neurosis over all this situation. So everybody said, so it's no big deal that this German guy, Kramer, war criminal kind of guy, is in American government. It's not an issue. So that's up to your sense of morality whether it is or not. But May did not like it. She was morally outraged at these, she being Jewish, at these Nazis that killed her relatives, so to speak, and friends were running the American Vietnam. That's, most people would find that shocking, right?
Yeah.
That their sons and daughters were going to war for a Nazi guy who should have been hung at Nuremberg but made a deal and survived it. And if you read my diary, you'll see that is when I met Carolyn, was in what? By what? Carol hates to hear this past stuff. She's so guilty about it. I've come to terms with it. I recognize my evilness. But Carol has to look like an angel and a helping person, so she can't have this evil shit happening in her psyche or in her image. Yeah. Anyways, you can read the diary. I should read. We're being driven. War wound. John Cleese's war wound. You ever see that skit? Fawlty Towers, when John Cleese's war wound would come back, he'd have a massive headache. Anyways, so Fritz Kramer is driving us around, and we're getting ready to gather up compromised people for the Project Paperclip. That was my first action in the Secret Council 10. Very prophetic, right? Very. I'm still working with Nazis right today. The names will not be mentioned. So, what are we saying here? So, May, what was the question? Something about May?
you know, we were talking earlier about our citizenship and how you played the Zapotec vote. Are you or have you ever been a Nazi?
And they go, yes.
And they said yes, but you said no. But I'm pretty sure it was communists. Have you or...
No, they say they did communists, but they do... No, we don't have the questions. Well, we have...
No,
you can look in your inventory of the 100 questions. No, that wasn't part of the 100 questions.
No.
That was something.
But anyway...
They do say 1933 to 45, because I remember I was guilty.
No.
I lied. They said, have you ever worked with the Nazis? And I said, no, I wouldn't do that.
But anyway...
He was guilty of it.
No, I think it was communist, but I'm saying it
Mr. Government, I'm just joking. I was not guilty. I'm bullshitting. I'm a liar. I'm 15 years old. It's all made up.
Radio personality.
Yeah, this is the entertainer talking.
Saying in 10, 20, 30 years, have you ever been a member of an alien foreign world?
Are you an E.T.?
Are you an E.T.?
Do you know Dr. Dean? Did you ever work for Dobbstown? That's right, Iondub. Did you ever have a private session with Ion? It'll be great, but did you? You don't remember being guilty over the Nazi thing, or you suppressed it, right? You don't remember that question being directed at you.
There was no Nazi question.
There was for me. I would be surprised that it had happened, but everybody, Ion blocked the interrogator's question. Ion didn't notice it. Only I could live through that. I could sit there and lie with the best of them, right? But they did. I remember feeling guilty a few times during the interrogation. I hope they don't notice I'm lying. But I pulled it off.
Yeah, they might sit you on a lie detector seat.
I wouldn't be surprised, Kellen, that the Nazis we've worked with who are still running certain aspects made sure we got accepted because they want us to be in here.
Mm.
They think we're working for them still.
Mm.
That's the only reason we got our citizenship because the Fritz Kramer network says, well, it's time we bring in Bob and Connie. Time we do this Ion stuff. Let's go big on this. It'll distract everybody.
You better stop, Bob. Matthew Rose doesn't like you talking about citizenship.
Is Matthew Rose Jewish?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Matthew? I work with the Nazis, Matthew. Does that bother you, Matthew?
I'm a Holocaust denier. It's okay.
I missed it. You mumbled. What? Are you a Holocaust? No, that's stupid, Matthew. Why are you saying that? It did happen. Denier.
I think they I think they overestimate the amount of murders, and there's no proof of gas chambers at all.
You're nuts. I was there. I fucking helped kill half of them, for fuck's sake. You know, I know what we did. And I know the numbers. At least friends of mine did. And, you know, there's a lot of people I knew that committed suicide. They were so guilty about it later. I was a cold bastard. I'd been around for 10,000 years, so didn't matter. I'd been through all kinds of Holocaust. I wiped out the Medicis. Yeah, I've killed everybody. Every culture has got me as a bruise on it. I've stained every culture that ever happened. I was here before the Logos, and I'll be here long after. Okay, so back to sober something. We've done the May Brussels part, and we'll go to the next part, all right, the next session, which is April 16th, 91, so this is almost 3 years later. There may have been another talking about May, but I didn't really find it in my notes. So now it's 3 years later, and supposedly the archives have been organized or something is stable, but it's not really that stable yet. So it's a problem, so I needed to talk to May about it. So being a unique intelligence agent, I go to the source, right? It's May's archives. No one else would go fucking talk to May. They didn't know how to do it. I did. Therefore, you are hearing an exclusive interaction. How's that for consultation? You guys didn't know fuck when you were kids or whatever you are. You didn't know to go and talk to people. You didn't know how to do it.
I didn't know to go to talk to dead people.
Yeah, you didn't know about that. You would just take ayahuasca and hallucinate dead people. But
Well, that's another way of communicating, Bob. another.
Yeah, no, I'm not knocking it. It's just that it's better to do it directly with a conscious mind. Okay, here we go. We're going to mute everybody and no, you guys talk for a second while I get the next recording. Go ahead. Mumble among yourselves.
Well, Bob and Carolyn are the only Canadians that I know of that are becoming American. And
That's right.
I mentioned this to some other Canadians, and not by name personally, not naming you guys personally,
yeah.
But I mentioned, I've got some friends or associates I know that are Canadians. They're becoming Americans, so they can vote. And the Canadians, I told them, they are just horrified by this.
That's right. Even I am reluctant to tell some of the older Canadian people that we've become citizens just because I don't want to hear their bitching. But they would be shocked.
So Bob and Carolyn are defecting. They're defecting into the
well,
new,
we use the principle. Here's the principle. When the masses go in one direction, you go in the opposite direction. That's the key to success. So all these people are running to Canada or, you know, going along with the meme of Trump's going to make it bad America. That's what the majority meme is. Well, we go in the opposite direction. We embrace Trump.
Yep.
And that'll prove, that'll tell you how we always win. You go in the opposite direction of the masses. So these, you tell your Canadian friends they're fucking stupid. They prove their stupidity because they go along with the mass mind and with the normal disgust that they've been programmed to have. According to Ion, Trump is so fucking smart and what he's doing in this election, it's unbelievable how good he is. So tell your friends that.
Yeah, remember how you talked about he's already acting like he's president, and he did that by going down to Louisiana.
Yes. Went down and helped the Louisianans,
yeah.
And give them a few toilet paper rolls or something.
Yep. An 18-wheeler of toilet paper.
An 18-wheeler of toilet paper, right. In vomit buckets. Whatever else one would need during a flood. And what's Hillary doing? Sleeping. And Obama, what was
playing
he?
Golf.
He was playing golf with me.
No,
he was playing golf with me.
He's out. Obama's out getting stoned with his daughter. You know, she got caught smoking pot.
That's right.
All up blues.
Is that right?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
He went to a Woodstock for their generation, and she got caught smoking dope and ran off with some people, you know, partied all night,
yeah.
Unrepentant, doesn't care.
But Obama has a history in Hawaii, you guys, of smoking it up, too, and was caught on video years back rolling around Hawaii, smoking it up,
yeah.
Toking it up. There's plenty of stuff on Drudge about that, I think, his smoked-up past. So, like father, like daughter.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we would go to the next recording. You guys can keep talking. I'm not ready yet. I got to find start at 41:57. Okay.
We like listening to you naming your tasks.
My instructions to myself.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm looking for 41:57, but the thing ends at the closest is 41:39, so I have to let it ride forward with the mute on.
Hmm.
I don't know what's said before 41:57, 41 minutes, 57 seconds. So we're waiting for it to get there. And then we'll have about 2 minutes, and then I have to take another break, then move it forward. Okay?
So you have all the May Brussels tapes itemized for talk?
Yep. Subject? I had to go through and listen to them and figure out what Bert's not allowed to hear. I just use Bert as the average item. What's in Bert tape?
The Uber.
He's the focus group icon, the average guy, the average diligent ionaut who does his homework. We use him as a gold standard. Yeah. Can Bert take this? No, Bert can't take that, Bob. I'll even ask Ion, can Bert take this? No, Bob, don't play it for Bert. He won't take it. Okay, so I don't know what's said in this part. What?
It's quite a highlight to hear you do the instructions, but you're an expert at it. It's amazing. I mean, the Ion clips is really comical because you cut, like, the last round of Ion personal sessions is funny because you would start, you would cut it off right when you go into something top secret, and then you was like, oops, you weren't supposed to hear that little piece when we were done.
Yeah, imagine being in a set of hearing, closed set of hearing. Oh, you weren't supposed to hear that. I apologize to the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, for playing something that we're all going to get in shit for, because the population, they'll figure it out. They heard enough syllables, they'll know what it meant. Okay, so now we mute you guys, because you're only citizens, right? You don't own this country like I do. You're just mere visitors here. To quote the movie, yeah, what do you call that movie? It's really good. About the CIA guy, Shepherd, the Good Shepherd. Mm. Yeah, we should actually find that and play it, where the Good Shepherd tells the mafia guy why everybody else is just a visitor.
He says, well, the Obama address to the new citizens was, we had to go forth and make the country great. It's up to us now to make.
Oh, yes, we had a personal message to us.
Mm-hmm.
We should say a few things. They brought in the guy who runs that department, and he was a self-conscious idiot. He says, I don't normally do this. So, and his picture was up there by the flag. He's who you salute. But he says, I don't normally read through this ritual. So bear with me as I stumble through it. And he would self-consciously smile. So he kept self-consciously smiling, apologizing, being a doofus.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Distracting from the seriousness of...
Yeah, he distracted totally. It was a total fraud what he did, what he created. It was, like, not serious. And he
introduced the different countries. Three people from Canada, one Brazil, one Bangladesh, and on and on and on. And there were about 16 different... people in different countries. And then he said, and all the rest of you are Filipinos.
So just stand up together.
Oh, my God.
Everybody you would name.
Really dismissive.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah, he said, he introduced each one of us, and we would go up and shake his hand. No, someone else read the names, and we'd shake the
that
goofus.
Was at the very end, but at the very beginning, he addressed the countries and
we had
blew
to
off
stand
the
up.
Filipinos.
Yeah, and so three Canadians stood up. A bunch of all the other countries. And they said, all the rest of you stand up, you're all Filipinos. And about 100 people stood up.
Man. So politically incorrect.
And the Maui is the Filipinos, Florida. They all come here. They've got a whole network. They get their jobs. They're all looped in. And they do the hotel work.